Today's message quotes from two different hymns and ends by putting a question on the lips of the unbelieving world. Today is the first Sunday of Advent. So how does that strike you? Is it one of those, I've heard about this before. Good for the kids, perhaps a little bit of a snooze for the adults. What's your reaction? Too early for this? Too late? Well, I think it's just about right. Advent is important. And I think it's getting maybe more important every year. So let's back up in case you're a little bit clueless here this morning. What is Advent? It used to get very little attention in the Protestant church, except for perhaps some of the high liturgical churches, and evangelical churches hardly mentioned it. But that's all changed. Now it's a widespread practice, a devotional practice for Christians across the boards. Billy Graham, for example, will send you a free Advent devotional if you want to go online and order one. But roughly speaking, it's the 4 weeks before Christmas, leading up to Christmas. Now here's a quotation drawn from the Roman Catholic Catechism. I'll explain in a moment. When the church celebrates the liturgy of Advent each year, she makes present this ancient expectancy of the Messiah, for by sharing in the long preparation for the Savior's first coming, the faithful renew their ardent desire for his second coming. Well, put that on your Christmas card. I don't agree with all things Roman Catholic. I guess that goes without saying, but I have no argument here. When you think about this, that you're trying to recreate the energy and excitement of those who anticipated the coming of Christ at Christmas. And then while you're doing that, I guess you might say somewhat artificially, because he already came, you're constantly reminding yourself that Christ will come again. Now, I believe in those two things, that Jesus came and that Jesus will come again. I think we need Advent now more than ever. Partly because, as you know, for many in our society, our Christmas is no longer a particularly religious holiday. Now, there's nothing new about that, by the way. That's a story that started hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago. Christmas is also a cultural holiday. And everybody wants a piece of it, and I don't blame them, because it's fun. But even those who aren't particularly religious want some of it, and you might find it surprising that I'm not one of those preachers who say that's horrible. I'd say, well, that's okay. You've probably heard that the church quite deliberately, used Christmas as a replacement for the Saturnalia, or it was a Roman holiday, or the one that comes right after it, the Sol Invictus. These were the two old Roman holidays that were celebrated about this time, and the Christian deliberately paved its own understanding over top of this as a replacement for people who were no longer pagan. Now, actually, that isn't such a watertight case as you might think, but the charge that Christians, that Christmas starts as a pagan holiday has its enduring power, even if it's not exactly true. And this alleged pagan root to the Christmas holiday as we understand it throughout history has caused some Christians to be kind of militantly anti-Christmas. And some of them can't even stop there. They have to go and be anti-Christians who aren't anti-Christmas. In other words, there could be no clearer sign of your own apostasy than the idea that you would celebrate such a holiday. So some of those who come from a more conservative Mennonite background might know what I'm talking about here. But let's talk about those ever mirthful and happy Puritans in New England. They were particularly perplexed about Christmas. And especially in the, I think in the 16th century, some of the really rowdy celebrations that matched Christmas in those days. Believe me, it wasn't all wholesome. And in England, and they rejected it. And they claimed some of those pagan practices probably did reach back to pagan times, right? Well, they rejected Christmas out of hand. In the salad days of Puritanism in the 17th century, the Puritans in New England banned Christmas for a while. It was against the law. But even after those laws were actually undone in the middle of that century, there was still a scowling disapproval of Christmas among the descendants of the Puritans in New England, Massachusetts, I quote. Well into the 1800s, businesses and schools in Massachusetts remained open on December 25th, while many of the churches stayed closed. Now that's a statement. We'll keep the businesses and schools open, but we're going to close down church deliberately on Christmas, on December 25th. Not until 1856 did Christmas, along with Washington's birthday and the 4th of July, finally become a public holiday in Massachusetts. Well, personally, I just don't share that Puritan view. I've never found that there was much power in the super Scrooge piety of stepping out and attacking both non-Christians and Christians for celebrating what I say is a pagan holiday. Now, sure, you have to swallow a lot here, right, though? I mean, even looking past the past, Christmas is now more and more commercialized. Certainly, it's been corrupted. While everybody from Krispy Kreme donuts to Sears tells you what the real meaning of Christmas ought to be. Certainly, a lot of people are clueless. And there are people in the culture, and I know some of them, who push back boldly and tell Christians, well, you know, you don't own this holiday anyway anymore. Christmas can be freely adapted to whatever message we want it to be. Now, that's all true. It might be slightly abominable at times, but it's not all bad. Say, I'm not a Scrooge. Well, at least people usually, at least at home, at their better moments, think of their better selves around that time of year, even while the merchants are busy, you know, raking in the dough. But whether you like it or not, these are the times we live in. And it's hard to communicate in that environment if you're a believer. There's a secular Christmas out there, and it makes a lot of its own noise. You could scowl at secular people and tell them, you just don't get it, do you? You could beat up your Christian friends with an example of your rigorous piety. I don't know, I had friends who had a lot of rigorous piety. God bless them, you know, but they made a point. There's no tree in this house, and we write a check to a charity every December 25th, and then we get back to work. Well, I'm a little intimidated by such an approach because, you know, that's not my Christmas morning exactly. You can repost memes on Facebook if you're really social media. Now, that's piety. The rumor starts that somehow a law was passed that you can't say Merry Christmas, and this is just one more example of something else, deterioration in our culture. What do you say? There's no such law. If you want to greet me in the name of Kwanzaa or Happy Hanukkah or Joyous Solstice or some boring generic happy holiday, well, I've gotten all those, and I'll probably get them again. I'll probably say, well, thank you, and Merry Christmas to you. Complaining about such a thing just isn't my style. It seems like it's bad manners to snub someone else's greeting, no matter what else it would be. Well, I'm not, you probably know, a particularly folksy preacher or a folk sayings kind of guy, but a couple of them filled my mind while I was working on this. You can draw more flies with honey. And you ought to light a candle rather than curse the darkness. I think there's a lot of honey in the Christmas message, and I think there's a lot of light, and I think we could use the entire Advent season to elaborate why, for us, as followers of Christ, this is still a religious holiday. There's so much junk out there. We'll need all 4 weeks to make ourselves heard over the noise, the rush, even what's there that's good or what's there that's bad, the nonsense. The development of cultural, commercial Christmas. It will take all 4 weeks. We can employ them all while we explain ourselves and make ourselves intelligible. A religious holiday for the church is not like it would have been for the ancient Roman back in the days of Saturnalia, not like it would have been in many religions around the world, not like it would have been in the Middle Ages if you had grown up over the Christendom of the Catholic Church. Not like it would be for a Jew if you were a Jew. For example, some Jewish holidays are obligatory. They're not optional. They're prescribed. You got to do it. God told them to do it. But there's no such thing as a prescribed Christian holiday. Nor is there such a thing as a proscribed holiday. You can get the difference between prescribe and proscribe. One tells you you got to, one tells you you can't. But the New Testament knows no thou shalt celebrate and no thou shalt not celebrate. You're completely free. You're free here this morning as a part of this church. You could drop Christmas and celebrate Groundhog Day. And it's perfectly within your rights if that's what you want. You're free to celebrate, ignore, speak for them, speak against them. We'll still love you. It's a great, big, wonderful world. Let's share our opinions. But as I look around me, most Christians I know still want to celebrate Christmas, and most of them want to keep Christ in that Christmas, and they want to let other people know that they keep Christ in that Christmas, if only to explain what we're doing December 25th. And Advent helps. It frames it. So, what do I want to say 4 weeks out from the big day? What do I want to share with everyone that will begin to give shape to this holiday? And perhaps surprisingly, I don't start with the gooey Christmas, good cheer Christmas card message. I want to start with the problem. I want to start with pain, with suffering, with the things that claw at us all. And starting there, I know, leaves very little commercial potential for anybody to exploit. What's the problem? What's the problem? For now, let's just say it's human unhappiness, human dissatisfaction, frustration, or in its most advanced form, suffering, the pain we experience. And now think of all the answers we have and all the energies that have been poured into solving that problem. Education, money, dedication, hard work poured into all the attempts to solve that problem, human unhappiness. Do any of them work? Do any of them work? Well, I'd say they all work, but they work a little. We just came through an election year, for example. One side wins, one side loses. Now there will be the usual recriminations, gloating, while people adapt to their new identity. But there's always that hope, isn't there? Especially for the winners, that this time someone got it right. The world will change. The problems will be solved. But who believes that? No one thinks a new government is the end of problems. Think of all the attempts to solve the problems we have through politics in human history. Some of them have worked. They're important, but they didn't solve the biggest problem. People still woke up unhappy. Think of medicine. Maybe it's the best way to illustrate this. Think of the expertise, the energy, the money that goes into medicine, but still, you've probably figured out, our bodies still break down and we die. It half works. Counseling and psychology have looked deeply into the human soul and prescribed some prescription solutions that help a lot of people get through rough spots, but the world still remains full of emotional wounds, soul sickness, even blatant insanity. It half works. And many of us have the experience that many, not all of us though, experience the gentle comforts of family and friends and communities and work. But they all fall short, don't they? They all help us, but they fall short of actually solving this problem of human unhappiness. There's some very good and comforting things in this world, and I certainly wouldn't want to take them away from anybody. There are efforts and inventions and relationships, wonderful improvements. But who believes in a utopia here in which human happiness goes away forever and for always? Somehow there is a dark cloud that hangs over even the finest of human achievements. There's a great old hymn that speaks this to me. You'll pardon the 19th century language. It's got some these and thous. It was written by Adelaide Proctor in 1858 in England. I might have left all that out, except that I read she was a friend of Charles Dickens. And what's a better person to quote at Christmas time than Charles Dickens? If you go off the page of the scriptures, we ought to go to the Christmas Carol first. It seems to me it's high on the list here. But it speaks about this issue. I'll quote from it at length. My God, I thank thee, who hast made the earth so bright, so full of splendor and of joy, beauty and light. So many glorious things are here, noble and right. I thank thee, too, that thou hast made joy to abound, so many gentle thoughts and deeds circling us round, that in the darkest spot of earth some love is found. I thank thee more that all our joy is touched with pain, that shadows fall on brightest hours, that thorns remain, so that earth's bliss may be our guide and not our chain. For thou who knowest, Lord, how soon our weak heart clings, hast given us joys tender and true, yet all with wings, so that we see gleaming on high diviner things. I thank thee, Lord, that thou hast kept the best in store. We have enough, yet not too much, to long for more, a yearning for a deeper peace not known before. I thank thee, Lord, that here our souls, though amply blessed, can never find, although they seek, a perfect rest, nor ever shall, until they lean on Jesus' breast. It's a wonderful hymn. That is just a wonderful hymn. She died an early death, by the way, on the lighter side of the news. She apparently just gave herself to charitable works and giving and wrecked her health. Dickens considered her something of a living saint. What's the problem? What's the real problem that eats us? And in that hymn, we see there may even be a plan involved in this, that our solutions don't reach so that we always reach for heaven. We always look to Christ for the answer. Does Advent point us to Christmas and point us even beyond that? Because I think Christmas provides us this answer to that untouchable, unsolvable sense of discontent, dissatisfaction, and the unresolvable set of recycling human problems that our mighty efforts only ever manage to hold back but never solve. Before the Christmas story makes sense, this unpleasant subject comes up. And when this unpleasant subject comes up, sin comes up, that dreadful word. But not as a list of the rotten things you and I do. Sin in the sense that we have turned away from God. And in the process, we, the human race, all of us, not just the human race out there, human race here, London, Ohio, this morning, we have lost ourselves. We long for glory and perfection and wholeness, but instead we find that there is, in all our achievements, rust and mold and corruption. Eternity is in our heart, but it eludes us and escapes us. And this takes us back to the earliest part of the Bible, and the very first declaration of the gospel, which you might say is the message of Christmas. I'm in Genesis 3. And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die." Then the serpent said to the woman, "You will not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." So, when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. She also gave to her husband with her, and he ate. Then the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings. You might suggest that that's the first half-baked solution the human race tried, the first one that worked a little bit. And they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and Adam and his wife hid themselves and from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. And the Lord called to Abraham and said, "Where are you?" So he said, "I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself." Now, I don't know how you read the Bible, but I assume this is a shorthand version of a very long and complex drama in which the first human pair decide they don't need God. They made the same choice that you and I made, that you and I would make, without exception, without excuse. And the result was disastrous. Now, I'm going to take the chapter 3 and put it a little bit out of order here. I'll keep it all in there, and I don't think I'll do violence to the text. But see, God stated the Christmas message first and then delivered the bad news. But I'm kind of in a bad news trajectory here, so I'm going to keep running down that line, then I'll tell you the good news. "To the woman, he said, 'I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. And to Adam said, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you shall return. Well, there's the problem. This is the problem for which there is no solution on earth. Obama didn't fix it. I don't think he's going to in the next few weeks. But I warn you, Trump won't solve it either. The Mayo Clinic won't heal it. Ohio State football can't play through it. Whole Foods won't give you a diet that frees you from it. La Leche League won't cause you to be started out on the right foot to win. NASCAR isn't going to numb you. The Cubs won't win. 21 Pilots won't outperform it. Netflix can only keep you numb for so long. Money, how much of it you acquire, this isn't going to buy you an answer. Google can't link you. YouTube can't show you some solution easily to get out of this. Need I go on? There is no earthly answer. The only answer and hope is in God Himself. And now Christmas is a big part of that story, and Advent gives you time to explain how. The very first declaration of the gospel, the Christmas message, you may say, is in Genesis 3, at the very beginning of this human tragedy. To the serpent, God said, and I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. That last set of verses was called the Proto-Evangelium, the first gospel, the first good news, the first declaration that it would happen. Adam and Eve represent us all, and they represent us as we would be without excuses. Were you to have no parents to blame your strange character on, if you had no bad neighborhood that warped you, if no disease or dysfunction got to you, if no genetic corruption was there, had you grown up in literal paradise as a human being, you would have still made this same choice to break away from God and become your own moral authority. I don't think in terms of this sin being that you just happen to stand downstream from somebody else's bad choice and God's going to get you for it. That doesn't sound like my God or justice. It sounds to me like we have two representatives named Adam and Eve, and they did exactly what we do, what we would have done, even if every possible excuse were removed from us. But even at that bleak moment, when it's so dark, Christmas shows up. Satan, and I don't think you can blame him for all our problems, by the way, tries to score a point by bringing the human race over to his side. This was a catastrophe, and Christians insist this act and what it represents explains all these tales of human sorrow and suffering from all time. The problem is diagnosed. We've turned from God, and the remedy has to be return to God. But it's simply beyond our powers. All problems that we experience in the 21st century lead back to this very issue. The many expressions, social and political and personal, all generate from this place. We can put out little fires. We can plug little holes. We can patch it for a while. But our problems are only partially solved by our efforts. In this passage, Christians know the solution. A titanic struggle is unleashed for the loyalty of the human race now, which is about to begin, and we live in its advanced stages. The seed promised to the woman is Jesus, who will crush our enemy and everything he represents to us. And as you know, this is done at enormous cost of the humiliation of the incarnation and of the cross. His heel was certainly bruised. I have trouble thinking about how you could put all that in a Christmas card. I don't think cheer most people up with a Christmas letter from me on the first Sunday of Advent. But it's just the first Sunday of Advent. And I have 4 days to 4 weeks to shape this story. This is the real reason Christmas is a big deal. When we stop at this point, we haven't said everything, nor have I answered all the questions that follow this. Why is the world still a mess, for example? But it does say that now this faith is unleashed. I have an answer, and it's not just another question about the matters at hand. So I quote my second hymn here. It's one of my favorites and has been for a long time. It's the verse from Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and it's the one that always gets left out, and I hate it every year when it gets left out because it's a beautiful, beautiful verse. Come, desire of nations, come. Fix in us thy humble home. Rise, the woman's conquering seed. Bruise in us the serpent's head. Adam's likeness now efface. Stamp thine image in its place. First Adam from above, reinstate us in thy love. It's not simple, but I'm glad we have 4 weeks to elaborate on it so that we can truly keep Christ in this year's Christmas and make that intelligible for a world that, in all its corruption, I believe, is still out asking, could there still be worship in Christmas?